So we all know that CP violation so far has been observed in the flavor sector only. So it is a very natural to seek a connection between flavor physics and CP violation. In particular, there has been a significant amount of work trying to understand the flavor structure with an underlying discrete flavor symmetry. So what I would like to do, talk about today, is to present a possible deep connection between non-abelian discrete symmetries. It may not be flavor symmetries, but this is very general, and physical CP violation. All right, and I emphasize physical for reason that will become clear later. And this could be in the quark sector or some CP violating a symmetry. So I will show explicit example. But the reason why I want to emphasize is physical. So in the discussion, in the subsequent discussions, I would like to clarify some confusion in the literature concerning generalized CP transformation. And I will argue that generalized. By imposing so-called generalized CP transformation, that's what GCP stands for, does not necessarily lead to physical CP conservation. All right? So this doesn't imply physical CP conservation.
So what do you mean by generalized CP conservation?
I will show you. That's what people call it. I'm not the person who invented this.
Is it a combination combining normal CP transformation with some flavor symmetry?
No, this is generalized. So yes, so that arises when there is a discrete flavor symmetry. So I'll tell you later why it is needed to impose or to introduce generalized CP transformation, but why it does not always correspond to a physical CP transformation. And what are the conditions that must be satisfied in order for a generalized CP transformation to correspond to a physical CP transformation?
The physical means the CP we know of, it takes particles, antiparticles, and
physical. Or those that can be observed or connected to the observed CP violation, and therefore it may have implication for liquid genesis and barrier genesis. That's what I mean by physical. All right? Any other questions? So we'll try to be not too technical because this is group theory, and if there's any questions, just feel free to stop me. And secondly, I would like to demonstrate that there's a very special property of the discrete group, meaning some of the discrete groups exhibit complex Kolmogorov coefficients. So this affords a new possible origin for CP violation. Which is purely group theory. So let's first of all recall how the canonical CP transformation work. Basically, just take particle and map into a particle. Yes. Yeah.
When you say complex Kolmogorov coefficient, both are usually basis dependent.
No, but I will. The point is for some groups, and I will specify explicitly what are the conditions where a particular group do not have CP basis.
So you're probably thinking of groups where the CP coefficient cannot be made real at all.
Yeah, precisely. All right, so the bottom line is there will be, at the end of the day, what you will find is there are three types of group. For a particular type of groups, there's just no CP basis at all. And therefore, there's no way to define physical CP transformation. And anyway, so just bear with me. All right, so with a canonical CP transformation, suppose we have a scalar field, phi, under canonical CP transformation, this get mapped to phi star. And in general, there could be a complex space in a CP associated with this transformation. Yeah?
And X changes.
I'm sorry?
X.
Yes, I'm sorry. So I should, thank you. So this is the projection operator, yes. Everybody agree with this? All right. But in settings with discrete symmetries, actually, things become a bit more complicated. And the reason is some of the discrete symmetries do not commute with CP transformation. So to show you one example. Very familiar example, familiar meaning familiar to some of you, A4. Mm-hmm. If I consider an invariant contraction, say I have a non-trivial singlet, I call it phi, it transforms as 1 sub 2 or 1 double prime of A4. This is a non-trivial singlet. I contract it with the 1-1 component that come out of the products of two triplets. Then this is an A4 invariant contraction. All right. But now if I just naively apply CP conjugate, the canonical CP transformation, by conjugating all the fields. Okay, so I have to be slowly doing this. So what this contraction give you in the component form is the following. So you have phi, x1, y1, plus omega squared. This is a complex Clutch Golden coefficient in this particular basis, y2, plus omega x3, y3, where x1, x2, x3 are the three components coming from the triplet x. And similarly for one.
Can we go back to what's the notation? One, zero.
So 1, 0 is a trivial singlet.
And the first one means?
The first one is a non-trivial singlet, which is distinct from 1 sub 2. Mm-hmm. So this is a group of A4.
So there are three one-dimensional representations in A4.
The one dimensional representation go like omega, the other is omega square.
And omega is a cube root?
Omega is a cube root of 1, yes.
And you're saying that it doesn't go like
under
any power.
No, singlet just means that the dimensionality is singlet.
But Tom, it's very easy. Just you have a group that has three one-dimensional representations.
Yes.
One of them is the trivial one-dimensional representation, the other two are non-trivial. You know, it could have a lot of representations. It happened to have three that are one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. If it helps you, sometimes people call it one prime and one double prime.
Okay, so let me do that. One double prime, and this is one prime, and this is one. So if I have, if I contract one prime with one double prime, this give me a trivial single representation. Mm-hmm.
Because one transforms like omega squared, the other one is
omega.
Right. Yeah. One is the complex, one prime is the double complex contract.
Yeah. So everybody happy?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now if I just perform a canonical CP transformation by conjugating all the fields, that will lead, that will map an A4 invariant contraction to something A4 non-invariant. Because, I mean, omega squared and omega, these are C numbers. So, I mean, they stay the same under canonical CP.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, if I have a canonical CP, this map something which is A4 invariant. Something which is non-A4 invariant. However, in this present example, this apparent inconsistency can be repaired by introducing something called a generalized CP transformation. So what that means is, under the generalized CP transformation, which I call CP tilde.
So it's me again.
Yes.
So Rebecca, this a bit. So the CP transformation here means you take the complex conjugate of this whole thing.
Right.
And that changes the omega squared to an omega.
No, so this is phi star, x1 star, y1 star, plus omega squared. No, this is C number, that's a point.
Okay. And how do you show that that's different? So some of these fields are complex and therefore different and they're non-complexified.
So this is not an invariant contraction anymore.
Because
of this rule. I mean, you know how you contract it to form an invariant combination.
So if any of the x, y, or phi are complex, then it's not invariant. Does that make sense?
No, I'm just saying this is not a A4 invariant contraction.
Because if x, y, and phi were real, it wouldn't be the same as
but this are these two CG coefficients are complex.
Yeah.
That's where the problem arises.
So I think what she's saying is that you cannot simultaneously define A4 symmetry and CP.
Yeah, that's what I mean by non-commutative. Precisely. So I'm going to show you how to repair this inconsistency with the so-called generalized CP transformation. And that's by making use of this. So just bear with me. So under the generalized CP transformation, phi still get mapped to phi star. But for the triplet, you see where the problem arises, right? So to solve it, I just have to interchange two and three labels. So let me just write it down.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Just to clarify my whole thinking. In a sense, this is not a phenomenon within the group A4, because you need, so for example, the X is some, you know, SU2 cross U1 theory, and they are doublets or something.
Right.
So otherwise, because then, because of the SU2 cross U1, you know the difference between X and X star.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Okay. But here I'm not even going to refer to any gauge theory. I'm just doing very, you know, so, anyway, all right, so if I send under the generalized CP transformation, I send the component x1 to x1 star, x2 to x3 star, in x3 to x2 star. And I'm able to make it consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, is under GCP now.
So you introduce another discrete symmetry, which interchanges 2 and 3. But that does not commute with the A4, right?
So that's the whole point. So the message is that by introducing this generalized CP, mm-hmm. which is actually identified as outer automorphism mm-hmm. of the A4 group, mm-hmm. you enlarge the group.
Right.
Precisely. So model, I mean, it requires a larger symmetry that contains A4.
No, I'm confused. So is this related to the double covering of A4?
No, I will show you. I mean, this is something else.
Okay.
So of course, I mean, this example of A4, later we will show there actually exists a CP basis. Mm-hmm. So I can just go to the CP basis, then all the Kapf-Schulin coefficients are real. So there's no problem. But there exist groups where no such CP basis exists. Mm-hmm. Any other questions before I go on?
Can you make a comment about the outer automorphism again?
This is, so this transformation, I will write out more clearly the group theoretical condition.
Okay.
But the so-called generalized CP transformations mm-hmm. are nothing but outer automorphism.
So you mean the discrete interchange of 2 and 3 is
yeah.
the outer
automorphism? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So again, we will see explicit examples, and hopefully they'll become more clear. Yeah. But just want to give you a motivation, or you know, why we have to introduce generalized CP transformation at the first place. And I should mention, these are actually proposed by the Heidelberg group. So it's Hohausen, Montbrelliner, and Schmidt. Yeah.
I have a very naive question. In the first line where you write the canonical to the
right.
transformation, if there are multiple components to the file, I would have thought that the ETC would become a unique limit.
Yeah, precisely. That's where I'm going to. Yes, precisely. But if that's the setting where there exists discrete flavor symmetry, the problem arises. And this U matrix you have in mind has to have some, it has to satisfy certain constraints. That's where we are going. All right? All right, so, yes. Already alluded to, if phi is, I mean, transformed non-trivially under some flavor group, and this phase here in this equation has to be replaced by some matrix U. And even though HLS stands for those three gentlemen, correctly pointed out that the need of generalized CP transformation, but the condition on U actually is more restricted than what they have. So again, phi here is a field, contains a field, your model, or theory. So in the original proposal, actually the UCP matrix that they proposed would have non-zero off-diagonal elements, meaning the U matrix is not a block diagonal form. And that's where the confusion come from, meaning some of the, anyway, you will see that more clearly.
Wait, so can, what's the guidance for you? Is that a member of the group?
No, it won't be, I will show you. Mm-hmm. So this just tell you that to consistently define U, it has to be of this block diagonal form, where you map a field phi, which transform as R sub I1, to its own conjugate.
Also, phi is not a multiplet of the discrete group.
Yeah, it is.
It transforms in some non-trivial way. But the point is that you have to, I mean, this U matrix is defined representation by representation.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're also assuming that the representation appears only once.
I mean, this is very general. I'm doing it in the model, I mean, in the theory space.
But then the approximation is repeated, putting one interchangeable.
I mean, then those two U's in the block diagonal form would be related, right?
I think you're just defining.
This is very abstract. Yeah. So just let me write down the mathematically what these two definitions differ.
Just to understand, you're writing down the general version of the 3x3 example that you had over there. Right?
Precisely, yes.
Yeah, with the matrix being just interchange.
No. So here I have a 3 that would correspond to one of the 5s.
Oh, only one of the 5s.
Precisely, that's the point.
So you are really generalizing into.
But not generalized to the extent this gentleman generalizes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so can I ask, so this is not a statement about the fields in your theory, but is it a statement about the different representations that you have?
Right. So what that means is it only makes sense to define generalized CP transformation based on the symmetry.
Okay.
No, but they all have to be in the same representation. They all have to be 3s, right? One of them.
No, this is 3, and this could be, say, 1 prime, this is 1 double prime.
But then how you were going to choose?
No, and therefore it is in the octagonal form.
Then why stack them on? Why stack them?
Okay, so let me write down two equations and hopefully you'll be happy.
Yeah, because it's not clear why you would want to write it that way.
Right.
Not just say a representation transforms in this way.
Exactly.
Okay. So the consistency condition that you have to satisfy is the following. HLS defined, but one really has to do it consistently by making it block diagonal.
Okay.
So I have the subscript of R sub I. That's the difference.
So is that just a statement that every representation has its own U? Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
What's curly P?
This is rho, so let me tell you. Rho is some matrix representation of a group element. And U is a automorphism of the group G. Any questions?
Is this just the definition of an automorphism?
So this is a condition that this U matrix has to satisfy.
In order to
be in order for it to be correspond to physical CP transformation.
Not the CP trivial, but the original CP.
You could define CP trivial. So the statement is you can define CP trivial, but CP trivial must satisfy some condition, and this is a condition.
That makes what's behind you, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a consistency. So you can define, I mean, you can erase this R sub I as the two gentlemen did, but the resulting automorphism does not correspond to physical CD transformation. Meaning by imposing symmetry or invariant of the Lagrangian under such transformation does not lead to CP physical CP conservation.
So I have another question, because U of G on the left hand side of the equation is not necessarily inside the loop.
Yeah, that's why it is auto automorphism.
Right, it's not automorphism.
Right.
But then so the rho, what you're doing, so rho is
a metric representation.
Why is rho is a representation?
It's a matrix value.
Right, rho is a representation of this U of G.
Right.
So it means that you already, because when you define the outer outline thing, you're enlarging the group.
Yes.
So it means that you're already thinking of the enlarged group there.
No, I mean, at this level, I mean, the statement is correct. In order to impose generalized CP transformation, you need to enlarge the group.
Which is already what you mean when you are applying the minus U to all elements of the G.
Yeah, that's all fine.
So in your A4 example, what did you enlarge the G?
No, this one you have, you there exists a CP basis. So I can just work in the CP basis where such complication does not arise. But I will show you explicit example by imposing this outer automorphism. We enlarge a group, and I'll tell you explicitly what that group is. And another statement is, it is not true that such outer automorphism always exists. And in such settings, CP is generically violated. So that's the bottom line. All right, and therefore this is a group theoretical origin of a CP violation. Yeah.
So in this case, so you want your generalized CP to be a discrete symmetry, and you're getting it as an outer automorphism of the discrete group itself. But outer automorphisms of continuous Lie groups, for example, are also discrete. Has anyone looked into models that do this sort of thing?
No, this is, I mean, all discussion here are...
This is all generalized CP of discrete
group. Of discrete group, but we can talk about the continuous case.
Okay. As far as you know, no one's looked at that.
No.
I have a really trivial, basic question. What is the condition? You have a condition, of course, CP twiddle square has to be 1.
Precisely.
Yeah, again, what does that imply for you?
Yeah, that's my next statement. So basically, the bottom line is you have to be class inverting and involuntary that take care of the fact that U square is 1.
Right.
Automorphism. So that's a condition. I should have just said that. I could have just said that. So U, the condition of U is that it has to be class inverting.
What's class inverting?
What that means is U of G is H G inverse H inverse. So this is basically this is an automorphism that map a group element to an element in the conjugacy class. And G, H is, G is the element in G.
Something wrong.
No, I think that's correct.
This is correct.
That's what people understand, which is that on the left-hand side, you have an equation of group elements of your initial group factor. On the left-hand side there, you have a U of G, which does not necessarily belong to that group. And this is the group element.
This is
a
group element,
this
is group element.
This is
yes.
After group element. So the question I have before, you're already thinking on the enlarged group.
No, this has to be enlarged because H is not a group element inside G. And that's why it is outer automorphism.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I will show you how this group gets enlarged. I'll be explicit, but here I'm just working on the abstract level. But yes, you are right. So it's very important, and this is the difference between that clarify a lot of confusion in the literature, meaning U is not arbitrary. You cannot just take whatever outer automorphism there. But U has to be class inverting, meaning it map a group element to an element in the conjugacy class. And it is involuntary, meaning U squared is 1.
Sorry, and
the
maps
to
another element in the same
class.
G
inverse.
Yeah.
So if you go, I mean, if you get to generalize, if you just take whatever outer automorphism U, it may not lead to, in many cases, it doesn't really lead to physical CP conservation. Yes.
So isn't H just U?
There,
and that equation isn't H?
No, H, yeah, this is U. Yes.
Right, so H is U. Okay.
Yes. And again, I will show you explicitly, I will have explicit example. You will see the explicit form of such transformation.
So, okay. So yeah. You also satisfy that condition so that CP tilde squared is 1?
Yes.
Okay. And you're saying
that and that's where the involuntary come from.
You may not always exist. That's
I'm sorry?
And you may not always
yes.
exist.
And I will show you the group theoretical conditions mm-hmm. when you would exist. You satisfy such condition would exist.
So it needs to be a Z2 wrapper on the one.
You will see.
So in your example, H is the interchange and G is the an A4 rotation, right?
Yes, in this particular yeah. case, yes. Yes.
And G inverse is the rotation opposite direction.
Yeah.
In with omega and omega star mm-hmm. interchange.
The fact that there's a CP basis in the group does not imply that A should be known to the group in the first place.
No. Again, I will be explicit. I mean, this also depends on the situation, so you will see. Mm-hmm. Just bear with me. All right. So I mean, all this discussion were triggered by the fact that the finite group, some of the finite group exhibit common categorical coefficients. So the first question is, what are the conditions for a group to emit real classical coefficients, yes? And that leads to the, so a very useful tool is called the Bickerstaff Damm-Boos automorphism. That a group emits real Clutch-Golden coefficients if for all group elements there exists an automorphism which satisfies the following condition. Which is very similar to what I have here, but it's a special case of this class inverting involuntary automorphism. Okay. So if a group where there exists such a BBA, then only CG I mean, there exists a basis. Mm-hmm. Where OCG coefficients are real. Mm-hmm. So that's the CP basis. And of course, in CP basis, the matrix value for U of G and the matrix value of this quantity must be equal. Mm-hmm. Because this big U matrix is not just one. Right? In CP basis, you don't encounter such complication. So far, so good?
I'm probably missing a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
But this, the equation you write down, this BPA thing, BBDA, it reminds me a little bit of Wigner's pseudo-real representation of conditions. Is this a Wigner's thing? Is it a special case? Of
this would be the special case. So yes, if there's a super real, pseudo-real representation, then you don't have the BBDA.
For
pseudo-real case, you don't have the BDA, but you, I mean, there could still exist cost-inverting voluntary.
Okay.
So that's where the other class of discrete groups are.
Okay.
So you don't have this when you have pseudo-real representation.
Yeah.
So the existence of such an automorphism is effectively like a complex conjugation of some sort.
So, good. So now talking about real, pseudo-real versus complex. So let's relate it to my next discussion, meaning how can one tell whether a given automorphism is a BDA or not? And a useful tool is the so-called Frobenius-Schur indicator and the 2C version of it. So, let's see. So for the Frobenius-Schur indicator, it is defined in the following way. So G here, this is the order of the group. And chi is a character for the particular representation. R sub I.
Are you summing over the representations or all the elements?
Yeah, you have to sum over it.
Yeah, you're summing over all the elements, not over the.
No, this is. Right, so here you could do it for every element. So there are three classes, three situations. See possible balance for MS. So if the value turns out to be plus one, this corresponds to a real representation. Where if it is minus one, this corresponds to pseudo real representation.
And zero for complex.
And zero for complex, precisely.
Yeah. Okay, I now vaguely remember, because I learned group theory so long ago, but I remember that in Hamamesh's book, he has something like this chi.
I think this is a very, very standard. But we also all have to go back and
okay, it's just a test for whether the representation is complex.
Right, precisely.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is the Frobenius-Schur indicator, which tells us whether a representation is real, pseudo-real, or complex. But now, one can define the so-called twisted FS indicator. So the twisted version is defined in the following way. Mm-hmm. this is defined with respect to a particular automorphism U and representation R sub I. Is it clear how this is defined? It should be straightforward, right? So this is, again, the order of the group in some order of the group elements here. Yeah, this should be self-explanatory.
So the stuff on the left is non-twisted, it's the standard.
It is non-standard.
Right, the standard thing in Hammermesh.
Yes, this is the standard
and
one.
And then that one is the twisted.
So this is a twisted one, and this is proposed by Biggerstaff, Dambus, and two Japanese later.
How long ago was that?
This is 85.
Okay.
And in 1990. So again, it doesn't matter if this is too abstract, but just tell you the bottom line. So if the twisted MSU is plus one for all representations, this is important. Then U is a BDA or BDA. In this case, there exists a CP basis where all the Clutch Golden coefficients are real. However, if some of the representations have minus one for the twisted FS indicator, then this is a case where U is class inverting. And involuntary. And therefore, it is possible to define a physical CP transformation. For the third case, is when this twisted FSU is zero. And that is a case when there is no class inverting involuntary automorphism. And therefore, CP is generically broken.
Mm-hmm. Is that zero for some representations or it's for all of them?
For some of them.
Okay.
That's why it is important. I said this has to be true for all representations.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I will show explicit example. All right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this leads to,
so the general ICP is broken if you don't have such a class inverting.
No, you cannot. It depends on how you define. I mean, you could still impose generalized CP transformation, but it has nothing to do with physics. That's a message.
Mm-hmm. In which case it has nothing to do with?
In this case, if some of the representation has zero.
Right.
All right, so that leads to the three cases. Again, we started out with a group G, which has some automorphism U, and if there exists a automorphism U for which no twisted FSU is zero. I mean, this is the first step. I mean, first step in the decision tree. If the answer is no, what that means is if some of the representations have zero as a value, then this leads to what we call type one group, where in generic setting, one cannot have physical CP transformation.
What are some examples of type 1?
Yeah, that's my next slide.
Okay. I don't want to be nitpicking, but since this is a sort of a math problem, the first box you mean outer automorphism, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. However, if the answer is yes, then this leads to the type 2 group,
mm-hmm.
Where in type 2 groups, one can define a physical CP transformation. But under type 2, we have two cases where if all the for all the representations, all the FSU are plus 1, then what that means is there exists, that leads to the type 2A case, where there exists a CP basis where classical and coefficients are real. However, if some of the FSU are plus 1 and some are minus 1, then there's no CP basis. But one can define, and one can have class inverting involuntary automorphism. And with that, you can define physical CP transformation. Mm-hmm. Any questions up to this point?
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's either deep or trivial or in between.
that covers
it. That covers it all. So if you let them impose CPT, does all of this satisfy CPT?
Yeah. Yes.
It does.
It does.
And the T here just means you would take X0 and B present by minus X0. Mm-hmm. And with all this fancy math, you can show that it's a conservative.
I mean, this is building, right? CPT.
Yeah, but so CP2 the T would also be good.
Yes.
For all these things.
It sounds like it really a fun question. Why is the answer obvious?
Yeah, that's not obvious. Not what if you have a type 1 group?
I mean, CP is broken.
But
it doesn't mean
no,
CPT.
No, but you've just shown that for some objects there's no CP transformation defined. But
so CP is explicitly broken.
No, but that means that T transformation is also not defined. But somehow the CPT transformation is defined. Is that correct?
In that setting, CP is broken.
But I'm talking about CPT.
So you agree in models where CP is violated, mm-hmm. CPT can still be a good symmetry.
Absolutely.
But
I can still define the CP transformation of my entities.
But you define
my Lagrangian doesn't have that property.
Mm-hmm. That's your choice.
Yeah, but you're saying something. Are you seeing something different that you can't define?
I will show you how to make. So later, what I will do in the explicit example is to embed type 1 group into a type 2 group, where you can impose CP, physical CP, and then spontaneously bring it down to type 1 group.
Okay.
And that will lead to a prediction. Where the CP violation depends upon the complex classical
coefficient. Can you write local Lagrangians and local Lorentz invariant for CPs to go on top of the concept, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So that's why I say it's building.
No, but I'm more worried about the fact that there are objects in the theory that don't have a CP transform. So that's right. So the CPT transform is well defined, but the T transform is the CP transform or not? I guess.
Probably that T will be also modified.
Yeah.
You can define CP in the old way, not just generalize
the old CP. Yeah. That's fine.
So here I could just leave with a canonical CP transformation CP
it just
is broken.
It's broken. Okay.
Yes.
That's fine.
So the statement is more that whether you can repair it
or not.
That's the point.
So do you have T to the transformation?
I don't show it here, but.
There is a T-tilde?
There should be a T-tilde.
No,
you mean for?
Has that been done? That there is a T-tilde, so that CPT-tilde is conserved?
No.
Okay. So then how do you know that CPT is conserved?
No, I mean, let's go back to the argument here.
Yeah, CPT is conserved.
CPT is conserved.
It just means you have a local.
Yeah. That's building.
No, if you have a local Lorentz right. invariant theory, you have CPT.
Yeah.
Concerned.
So I want to just build it into my theory.
But we should be clear here. Your entire discussion makes no reference to local Lagrangian or anything, right?
No, I will show it later.
This is just mathematics.
This is just mathematics, and now from now on, I just want to show you example first, and then I will show three physical examples. Mm-hmm. I calculate the chaos symmetry for you.
Okay.
And everything should be waterproof and it's clear.
Okay.
Okay, but here is all math, I agree. But the following part will be physics. So here are the examples of three types of groups, where for type 1 group, all the up-order non-abelian groups are type 1.
Discrete
groups, yes, thank you. So so here SG is just some labeling, refers to small group for people who use that software. Where the first number this corresponds to the older of the discrete groups, and the second number is sort of arbitrary, this is the labeling. And I will show an explicit example based on Milner 27. Where for type 2A groups, this is a group, or these are the type of groups that have CP basis. this include the dihedral group and all abelian obviously groups. So again, here are various examples, and I will later in the physical example, I will talk about T'. For type 2B groups, here I give you two examples. These are fairly huge, sigma 72 and this monster here.
I missed something. SG?
SG, this is small group. So this is a library that has, you know, all this discrete groups.
Oh, it's just a reference.
Just a reference.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean the more crucial point is the first number that just tells you the order of the group.
The order. Okay.
Yeah, but it doesn't really mean anything.
This refers to what? For what is SG, this notation reference?
Small group, SG. I don't know. This is software that which is a library that that was built there's a software called GAP.
I understand the first number, like for T prime is 24. Mm-hmm. That's 4 factorial.
Yes.
Right? But what is 3?
It's a random number. It's just a labeling.
Just what do you mean labeling?
The number 3 discrete group has order 20.
Oh, there's 3 of those.
So it's random.
4 is the 4 factorial.
Yes.
Right, yeah, okay.
So it has nothing to do with all these numbers.
There are at least
12
groups with 24.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so good. Let me see, where am I? All right. So first example. Which is based on delta 27. So I'm going to build a toy model that has the following field content, where S, X, and Y are scalar fields, and psi and sigma are fermions. Mm-hmm. And they have the respective transformation property under delta 27. All right, so S field, it is a trivial singlet. The X field, it transforms as non-trivial one sub one. This Y field transforms as a one sub three, where the two fermions transform as real representations. And I also assign them some global U1 charges as shown in the paper. And the important thing is phi and sigma field must have non-equal U1 charges. All right, so with this particle content, this is the four Lagrangian that I can write down for my toy model. All right, so F here is just some coupling constant. And the first bracket, this is a delta 27 invariant contraction that involves S field and this 1-0 product coming from the 3 cross 3 of the two fermions. Is it clear what this notation is?
Now, the claim you're going to make is that CP is violated regardless of whether the couplings are
yes, and that is where I'm getting at.
Now, clearly, in order for that statement to be correct, you're using the fact that delta 27 is a type 1 group.
Yes.
But you're also picking the right combination of
representations. Precisely. So that's why I said generically CP is broken.
Okay.
But there could be non-generic setting where you choose your...
I mean, if you can speak just the singlet, and that clearly invariant...
Sure, but I mean...
27, but that's kind of boring.
Yes.
But that means you have to pick the right representation.
Right, right.
Now, with the type 2 groups, if you have a type 2...
A
group, the one where everybody is one,
mm-hmm.
you can still have a CP violating theory, but you have to work harder, and it won't be related to the group structure.
I mean, there, yes. So you could either have a coupling constant.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Good, okay.
All right, but here what I try to say is CP is generically broken.
Yeah, but if you have a type 2 group, there's no combination of representations you can pick that will give you the kind of CP violation that you're trying to illustrate?
No. So that would be a different origin. It okay. could be just explicitly from the complex coupling constant.
Okay, good. Okay.
But here I just try to show everything is coming entirely from your theory.
Good. Okay.
Yes?
I didn't understand what Andreas said. You was too quick between the two of you. Did he say that you give me this Lagrangian, everybody knows how to violate CP by making the complex complex.
Right.
Everybody, just trivial. But he's saying, and you are saying,
well, she's
that
saying,
even you are saying that
yes,
even
saying.
If all the couplings are real, you still would be forced to CP violation.
Right, and actually for that statement, you can impose. Actually, you will see it's not only coupling to be real, but you can choose the coupling constants to have certain phases so that CP is invariant as a Lagrangian. However, what I will show is for this particular toy model, CP still get broken once you include properly the RG corrections. Oh. It's not protected by the symmetry.
Just
wait for me. Let me go out. Then it will be clear. All right, so this is the full Lagrangian we have. And of course, I can write everything into the complement form.
Okay.
Yes? So IMJ just refers to the components within the triplet field.
Yeah.
So once I write everything to the complement form, then I have matrix for the coupling constants. So let me just do that. So if you work out this Fij matrix, it is proportional to the coupling constant F and a 3x3 identity matrix. That's what the Cox-Gordon coefficients of delta 27 tells you. For the G matrix, this is again proportional to G. And here you get some non-trivial flavor structure.
Okay.
So far, so good? For the H matrix, this is where the CP violating coupling comes from. Again, it is proportional to this coupling constant H. Mm-hmm. And from the Cox-Gordon coefficients,
right.
You know, you can work out this 3x3 matrix, where omega here, once again, it is e to the 2 pi I over 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's complex. So I'm going to calculate the decay of symmetry, which is due to this coupling. And this coupling.
Mm-hmm.
So why can decay into side by side? Well, due to the interference of the tree level diagram, and the one loop diagrams. Right, so IS and IX are the loop integral that depends on the mass of the S field and the mass of the X field.
Okay.
And that becomes important.
So the point you wanted to make is that there's no choice for H4 and H sigma that renders this zero.
Right, so you could ask what would be the condition such that epsilon vanishes. Mm-hmm. And the condition turns out, so you may say, all right, if I just fine-tune the relative phase between these two coupling constants, I can make epsilon zero.
At one loop.
I'm sorry?
At one loop.
At this, just, I'm stopping at one loop.
Is there a statement about masses? About
yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
So even if you, so the point is, even if you fine-tune the phase, the relative phase between these two coupling constants, it is not protected by quantum corrections.
Okay.
Unless some conditions are satisfied. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what the conditions are.
So what if sigma is heavier than y?
Oh, say it again?
Okay, so don't these, so that these loop factors are real, I think, when the sigma is heavier than the y.
Yes, that's right.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
But I guess that
it has to be on shell for being measured.
I understand, yeah. But maybe that's just the fact that the example fails, but CP is still broken in somehow.
No, so here, I mean, I'm asking a different question. Okay. What would be the condition?
Okay.
Where epsilon vanishes?
No, I mean, all that I'm saying is that for this observable, if the sigma were heavier than the y, then this object on the right-hand side is trivially zero because your loop integrals are real.
Right, but I mean, I'm considering other parameter space.
That's fine, I understand. Oh, I see what you mean by fine-tuning. Okay, so if you canceled one term against the other.
Right,
right.
That's what I mean by fine-tuning.
Okay, I don't.
So you could say, all right, I just go and fine-tune this relative phase between these two coupling constants.
Okay.
So you just choose it to be, basically, this is what you have to fine tune against.
Right.
But even if you do it at one scale, it can be generated by RT. That's clear, right? And then you can ask what would be the condition for which phi is stable.
Mm-hmm.
And the condition turns out to be the following, where what you need is this two loop integral to be equal, which tells you that mx and ms must be the same.
And the couplings.
And also the couplings must be equal.
So the condition is that you are able to observe f phase, an extra phase in your Lagrangian. So that condition would mean probably that you can absorb extra phases in the Lagrangian.
But what I'm trying to, so the bottom line here is that these two conditions cannot be realized with altered automorphism on this group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It does not exist. It doesn't exist.
You mean what you just wrote down?
Yes. These two conditions cannot be ensured.
Oh, I see.
By any altered automorphism of the delta 27 group.
But you can just enforce it. You can evaluate your Lagrangian. It will mean that the Lagrangian has more symmetry, right?
No, the statement is if you are given that selection, the collection of representations, say that's what nature chooses, and you know they transform that way, then there is no altered automorphism new. There's no other automorphism U that can ensure these two conditions.
Yeah, but you can choose those two conditions.
I'm sorry?
You can choose them. Actually, you can choose the X2.
No, this is not protected.
It's not a symmetry.
So why is it? Because if I do that, it looks as if I now have a symmetry where I can, when I can exchange S and X.
Right, but there's no U.
Right.
They can interchange those pairs.
Oh, that I agree, but I don't care. This is still stable, right? In the sense that
if such symmetry, right. So you can enlarge. You don't care whether you have to be altered automorphism or not.
Correct. Okay.
You can enlarge the symmetry of your model.
Okay.
Yes, so 2 out of Z1.
But this is no longer delta 27.
Yeah, that's correct. But that is a different here.
No longer.
Sure, but I mean, the statement is more about delta 27.
I understand. Okay, good.
Have you checked the leptogenesis from this?
So this, I mean...
this is leptogenesis.
This is leptogenesis, right? In principle, once you get this non-zero CP base, you could implement...
But you're saying you're working.
Yes, I mean, this is...
That's correct.
So of course, here in this particular toy example, I don't really generate any particle antiparticle symmetry.
That doesn't matter.
But it doesn't matter. I mean...
But that's independent of the flavor group.
What do you mean?
Well,
so here I'm specialized to the group delta 27, type 1 group. Alright.
Now you said the charges have to be different. If they're the same, then what goes wrong?
No. Then you would allow for other operators.
Okay.
So what I want here is I just want this these four terms.
Fine.
Just
okay.
For my toy model to work.
Good.
Yeah.
Let me see if I get it. So you can tune coupling so that this runs in the CP environment.
Yes.
Right? But then when you put these operators together, as you did there, you're going to find that you can only tune to get CP invariance when these two conditions are met, but they'll run. And so
right.
In general, CP will be violated because at the loop level where it's conserved in the run. Is this right?
So you can fine-tune this coupling constant such that it is CP invariant, but you can only do it at one scale. So what that means is quantum corrections will regenerate CP violation. Unless you have some symmetry that ensure these two conditions. However, such symmetry does not exist. I mean, it is not coming out
of the symmetry.
It is outside of the symmetry that we start out with.
So if you, I realize it's a toy model, but if you were to calculate then how much antimatter versus matter differ, it would depend on, I guess, it would depend on where you choose this in the normalization point. Where you choose those equalities, these two conditions to be true. Is that so?
No, she's saying that if for some chance that those conditions were satisfied, then you would be in a place where everything is stable and this can be exactly zero. But if that's the case, the symmetry that's associated to this is outside of the symmetry that you put in to begin with. So your Lagrangian has a bigger symmetry that you didn't appreciate when you wrote it down.
Okay.
Right, so
But it remains zero.
Oh yeah, it would, yeah.
It would. So that's my next example.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning so here the problem is that there's no outer automorphism U of delta 27 that can interchange those pairs. But now I'm going to replace this pure singlet 1-0 by a different a non-trivial singlet. And later you will see by doing this choice we can embed this delta 27 to a type 2 A group.
Okay.
And then I'm spontaneously gradient. Yes.
So then this is stable? Is that an enhanced symmetry?
It is still an intense symmetry, yes.
But you haven't identified what
I do. In my next example.
Okay.
Here this is, I mean you have to just it's not outer automorphism of delta 27 anymore.
Okay.
But in my next example I will show you precisely what that bigger symmetry group is.
Okay.
It's SG54, come on, bye.
Of course.
All right. So I hope, so discussion so far, I hope to convince you that delta 27 generically violates CP.
Right.
But now, as I said, I'm going to replace this S field by a... So I'm going to replace this trivial singlet by a singlet, a non-trivial singlet, which transform as 1 sub 8. All right?
How many singlets are there for the?
In total, 9, because this is a group of order 27.
I see.
Right? So if you take the dimension square of each representation, they have to add up to be 27. All right, so let me just show this here. Anyway, so these are the OD representations
available
in Google 27. All right, but once I do this replacement, then I have a new coupling. So instead of the F coupling, I have G prime.
Is Delta 27 a natural subgroup of SO3? Yes.
SO3?
Yeah, no. Yes. SU3? No.
SU3?
I think it is. I think so.
It is.
What does
natural mean? Is that
3n
squared?
Right. It is. It's 3n squared, yes.
What does a natural subgroup mean?
Well, for example, the tetrahedral group is natural subgroup of SO3.
Yeah, but what does the word natural mean? In which context?
Just
something. Oh, okay, good. Okay, good.
Just
something.
All right, so.
It's something that's easy to understand.
Okay.
It's
all right, so this is a couple, this is the operator that I have to introduce in replace of the operators that involve S. All right, so once I have this, this leads to a coupling matrix. Of the following form. And again, omega is 2 pi I over 3. And I also have to replace this diagram by the diagram that involves Z. And this is coupling. Anyway, so you get the point. This is sigma and...
Don't worry.
Yeah. You can work it out. So I'll just tell you the bottom line. The contribution from the piece that involved the S field now becomes the following. What will be the condition under which epsilon vanishes?
What was the other piece again?
The other piece, remember there are like two diagrams.
I remember, yeah. So what's the other one?
Let me see. I erased it. The other one would be the one involving the X field.
Right, but what is the imaginary part of couplings looks like?
Yeah.
Right, so one, this is... This is depend on F, right? This is...
I want to remember what the answer looks like, not the diagram.
The second term
No. I just want to know the answer. So when you write down, this is the G prime contribution.
Right.
There's going to be a.
And there is a.
F contribution. Well, I guess a G contribution.
There's a G contribution.
Which looks like what? What does this expression look like?
Right. So it's omega instead of omega squared.
Okay.
Could
I ask you a more naive question rather than a detailed question?
Yeah.
I noticed all your examples involve omega. Omega plays a crucial role. So is the fact that this game only works for three families, or you can do it for four or five?
In general, you can do it for multiple generations.
Multiple generations, families. Not just three.
No. Well,
just all your examples
just
three. And omega plays a very special role.
Right, but I mean, here I don't really refer to three generations, because here I don't, I mean, this is not a flavor symmetry. I'm just doing it.
No, I know you're doing this as a toy example, as abstract. But this omega seems to play a very crucial role.
But it comes from this third root of one.
Okay, I know.
But that's because you're picking groups that have that in it.
Right.
You pick
right.
A bigger group, you get.
Precisely, yeah. You get something different.
Okay. You're picking, so these are fermions, you have three generations of fermions, right? So you're in this omega radius, you have three fermion generations. Yeah. And they are the ones that are transforming feedback. So in a sense, these are these in this pattern, this is a flavor symmetry pattern.
No, I don't assign any. I mean, you could make it as flavor symmetry, but the point is, you don't need to do that. I mean, this is very general.
No, I agree. I agree that, yeah, we're saying that in these Ptolemy models, it seems that the Fermi fields are in the field of representation. It looks like Fermi.
Sure.
Yeah, remember that.
Okay, can I go on? Mm-hmm. All right, good. So for the G contribution, it's omega instead of omega squared. All right, so once I have that, I can then go ahead and ask, what will be the conditions under which total symmetry vanishes? And it turns out to be the following. So first of all, if MZ and MX have equal masses, secondly, G and G prime have equal strength. And also, this relative phase between the two coupling constants, H, vanishes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that these three conditions can be ensured by the alter automorphism of delta 27, which is U3. So what it does is that it interchanges 1,1 and 1,8. Mm-hmm. Now you see the reason why I need to replace this 1,0 by 1,8, so that it can be paired up with 1,1. Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the new root now?
I'm sorry?
What's the new root now?
SG54, comma 5.
Right.
That's my next slide. But here, this is still at the delta 27 label, where I show five sample outer automorphisms, and you see what they do. And here, this is another. This is also to illustrate that if you go ahead and calculate the twisted FSU indicators, you get some zeros, and therefore this is a type 1 group. All right. So now, once I have the U3. What I'm going to do next is to and another thing to see this is type 1 group, and you cannot impose physical CP transformation is the fact that none of the U maps all the representations to the conjugate. Yeah. And of course, again, you can properly choose the representations such that CP is preserved. But in a generic setting, that may not be true. So the next step, what I'm going to do is to unify X and Z, and then actually form a doublet under this bigger group, SG54,5, that answers your question, Daniel. Right? Where psi and sigma conjugate, they form a hexaplet under this bigger group. And of course, in order for U3 to work to interchange in these representations, that also tells you their U1 charges must be related. So I already take that into account. Mm-hmm. Should I write it down, or anybody follow what I'm saying? Okay. And the Y field, which transforms as 1/3, it is a non-trivial singlet of the bigger group. But it is still a singlet. Alright? And now what we're going to do, and I also need a non-trivial singlet of the bigger group, which is which transforms trivially under delta 27. So it spontaneously break SG54,5 down to delta 27. So with this bigger symmetry, which is, so this is SG54,5. This is basically the semi-direct product of delta 27 with this Z2 symmetry associated with this U3 automorphism. All right, so once I have this symmetry, then I ensure that X and Z have equal masses. But they acquire a mass splitting once SG54,5 is broken down to delta 27. Mm-hmm. And that break, I mean, that mass splitting is given in by this term here.
So I think what we were saying before is incorrect.
What?
I think before we were saying that it's possible to use a similar thing for the other case.
No, that's not what I said.
No, we didn't.
That's what we said.
That's what we said.
So why is it not possible?
No, you were right, we were wrong.
Why is it not possible?
Exactly. So the question now is why is it not possible to do this same thing in the other case? And I think that if we look at the Lagrangian probably, because we were thinking of an exchange symmetry, right? I think that if we look at the other Lagrangian, it's going to turn out that even that you cannot the exchange symmetry is there. So even if you put mx equal ms and the other condition
And
you just look at the table.
I think the Lagrangian is not going to be invalid.
It looked invariant, but I could be wrong.
I already erased this
one. So what are the masses here? This condition that you put that F equals 0 to B and MX equal MS. What are the masses here?
Okay, so if you make F and G the same, and the mass is the same, then the Lagrangian is invariant. And I don't see any breaking effect.
The question is why I cannot do the same thing that you just did?
Because you don't have any outer automorphism available in delta 27. I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's possible if you go beyond delta 27. Mm-hmm. It would be a symmetry which is going beyond this.
And here you are going beyond delta 27.
Yeah, but I mean, in that case, you don't even have this option available.
There's something I'm missing, but it's my fault.
So the question is more, people identify outer automorphism as generalized CP transformation. Mm-hmm. So that's my assumption. These are the extension of my symmetries that I'm looking at. And the statement here is that there's just no such GCP available which corresponds to physical CP transformation. And you are free to go beyond this framework and find a bigger symmetry, but that's not what we are talking about here. Mm-hmm. All right.
Have you ever automorphisms in discrete groups been classified?
What?
Have they been classified, the outer automorphisms at all?
I mean, this can be calculated.
So they have
classified, but you don't put any group there. So instead of set 2, you don't put the group. If you start with a group, you don't define as many outer automorphisms as you want.
Yeah, but you have.
That operation is defined for. Don't put any set n there. Right?
So all the outer automorphisms are Z2.
I mean, in this case, this corresponds to
the class inverted.
Right. No, here, this is not class inverted.
Not this one. Yeah.
All right. So, yes, so that I just said. So then you go ahead and calculate. I mean, this is your resulting asymmetry of the same process. So clearly, you see this imaginary omega show up. This is the delta 27 Koch-Golden coefficient, where this is basically controlled by the mass splitting that is due to the spontaneous breaking of the symmetry. It has good theoretical CP violation.
So when you spontaneously break the symmetry, don't you also break CP?
Yeah, this is the point. This is the point.
No, in the vacuum expectation value of the field?
No.
No, at which field?
I mean, here, I don't even remember.
You have a complex potential, a Higgs potential with complex coefficients. I would expect the vacuum expectation value to be complex as well.
You may, but here, Remember, here I'm calculating the decay asymmetry. I don't refer to any vacuum expectation value. So what you're saying is correct.
No, I mean, you said there's a symmetric breaking. That must be, yes, it is spontaneous?
It is spontaneous, yes.
So there is a symmetric breaking.
It is a symmetry breaking.
So then why is that part not generating additional
heat? It could, but it's in a different sector.
Okay.
So what I'm saying here, first of all, it is basis independent because I trace over all the coupling matrices. It's basis independent. Secondly, it depends on the coupling constant square. So it doesn't depend on the basis of G or F or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, I don't refer to any VAC. Y doesn't acquire a VAC. Right? This is just a decay, Y into side by side.
No, but you're talking about the mass splitting between X and V.
Yes. Yeah.
That arises after symmetric breaking.
That's right.
So you are talking about some vacuum. Maybe you are not, but I think I interpret it as some certain vacuum effect.
No, but that's the breaking of the larger group.
That is the breaking of the larger group.
So the delta 27 is telling you that CP is violated, and you're parameterizing that in terms of the breaking of the larger group where you didn't have that. Or that's how I understood it. Because if you set this phi to zero, then CP is not violated.
That's right. That's right.
Because now you have a bigger symmetry that is of the right type.
That's right.
Okay. So before the phi quasi, CP is
not violated. No. So here, this is an example where I try to start out was a setup, G2, where you can impose CP conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a type 2A, then you can just go to CP basis, fine. If you are in type 2B, you can introduce generalized CP, but make your Lagrange invariant, CP invariant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to break G2 down to G1.
Mm-hmm.
And through this breaking, CP is generically broken.
Mm-hmm.
And the breaking is controlled by the Kapsch-Golden coefficients.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main message.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of getting bogged down in the details, could I ask you sort of the general philosophy of your people? Your people meaning you, your people.
My collaborators.
The Germans, these Germans and so on.
My Germans.
The rest of the people are ordinary people, like most of us. Ordinary people just write down some Lagrange and break CP. And for 40 years, since the papers of Lee, Weinberg, and so on, just make things complex, no big deal.
Right.
And then get CP violation and so on and so forth. But the phases are not predicted.
Precisely.
And so on, right? And you're saying you have a fancier way. So are you objecting to that?
No, I'm not objecting to that.
I mean, are you saying the ordinary people should stop what they're doing?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not saying that. No. I'm just saying here, it's just providing a more predictive way.
So the phases would be predicted.
The phases will be predicted.
But
exactly.
Then you have to introduce all these other things that are sort of, right? You have to introduce a lot of other stuff.
Well, they may have, first of all, if they are light enough, they may be other phenomenological consequences.
But why don't we just introduce a few Higgs and let the couplings be complex, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's
so
not predicted.
Ordinary people like Weinberg would just do that, right? But I'm trying to understand your people. Why?
You can also make statements about all those other groups which people can use for flavor model building.
So what is your philosophy? It's not saying the other people are wrong, or
no. This is just an alternative way. I mean, you could live with a world where the coupling constants are just complex. But it doesn't have to be. And here, this is a framework where you can hopefully explain both the flavor structure, and here you also predict CP violation.
But do you feel that parity violation had to be explained in some fancy group theoretic way? Just by sticking it in. I mean, the other way, the ordinary people would just be sticking it in, right? So I'm trying to understand why the ordinary people, your people seems to be advocating something much fancier.
No, I think the way to look at it is, if you go from top down, so it's tree model construction. You actually, a lot of these finite groups can come from as a remnant of the Lorentz group from extra dimensions.
From string theory.
From string theory. Or you may not even go to string theory, just... You agree?
I have heard friends talk about getting discrete flavor groups, modeling discrete flavor groups from Hadamard models, right?
Right, right. And it is sort of intuitive to some extent that CP transformation can be tied to, you know, the space-time geometry. Because again, parity is involved.
Have you looked beyond color models? Do you have some group that gives Lefter genesis?
So that would be the next step. So here, we just try, because I mean, there have been a lot of confusion in the literature. People just blindly apply generalized CP transformation. And there are tons of papers in the literature. But here, I mean, one purpose is really to clarify. You cannot generalize it too much. I mean, this outer automorphism has to satisfy. It has to be class inverting, involuntary.
So you, right now you have this formalism that, and this logic that you've identified, and then the next step would be to see if it can be applied.
Right.
Genesis,
for example, I mean, here we don't even have a realistic flavor model yet. I mean, this is just proof of principle. These are examples where physical processes can tie to the properties of these different types of discrete groups.
Do you need three flavors to give you a group that satisfies the conditions? For
No. This is very general. No.
So you can do here,
I don't even.
Flavor.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. Yes.
One flavor probably will be okay. It will be abelian group.
It will be abelian group.
Two flavors.
All right. So I think my time is almost up. So I hope here, this is a type 1 example. I still have type 2, which basically is the type of groups where you can define CP bases. And there is some complication concerning bases, but it's just technical detail. But the bottom line is, in those type of groups, there's a CP basis where all the Kapsch-Golden coefficients are real. Where in the type 3 groups, that's a case where there's no CP basis, but one can introduce generalized CP transformation and that defines a physical CP transformation. And therefore, it makes sense to perform physical CP transformation. But one has to be careful. The altered automorphism has to be class inverting and involuntary. That's a message. So I think I should stop here.
Yeah, it's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
Do we have questions?
I have a question. Maybe you said early on, this only works if you have discrete groups. It wouldn't work if you have a continuous group.
I don't think so.
Is anybody left?
I doubt it, but I don't think so.
Continuous
you don't get the classical, precisely, that's why.
Depends on it.
Coefficient.
Yeah. I think that's a correct statement. I mean, I don't have a mathematical proof, but I think that's a correct statement.
Yeah, your A4 is an example. I embed A4 into SO3.
Right.
The complex Kapsch-Golden go away, they all become real.
Right, but I mean,
the one prime and the one double prime jump into the 5 of SO3.
Right, so of course, I mean, there's a question whether this embedding I just showed you of a type 1 group into a type 2 group, whether this embedding works if you start off from a continuous group and then break down to type 1 group. That's another possibility.
Can I ask you a general question?
Yes.
Because you're talking, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. And in group theory, there's sort of one can ask the following question. If somebody gives you a group, then I could ask you, given that group,
You have the identity, of course. How many square roots of the identity are there? That is, how many group elements squares the identity? And you can ask the same question about cube roots and fourth roots and so on. And this is related to what you're doing, right?
Yes. I mean, in a sense.
When 19th century guys asked how many square roots of identity, that's like saying how many ways of having a CP. Is that right? Is that kind of vaguely related, that class of questions?
I think what you're saying leads to the phenomena that this some of the clashes could be real, as could be complex.
Could be complex.
I think to that extent, they are related.
Okay.
Anyone? All right, let's thank you.